NASA 557, contact tower 128.15.
Caution, caution. Manual, fuel, manual, fuel.
I'm John Golia.
I'm Greg Fife.
And I'm Todd Cruz.
And we are the Flight Safety Detectives.
Between us, we have over a century of aviation accident investigation and safety experience to draw on as we discuss issues that affect all of us.
So we are qualified to share our perspectives on accidents and incidents and what can be learned from them for the future.
We're proud to say that we have two sponsors that really relate to the topic of aviation safety: the Professional Aviation Maintenance Association, or PAMA, and Avemco Insurance. Later on in the show, we'll tell you how you can get a 5% discount on your insurance just for listening to the show.
We don't just dissect the official reports. In every episode, we identify safety issues and take the mystery out of accident investigations.
So maybe pilots and their planes can have safer flights ahead.
Well, hello, John. This is a special edition of Flight Safety Detectives because we are talking about a current event. That event being a 737-9 MAX produced by Boeing and operated by Alaska Airlines that had an in-flight problem last night or yesterday afternoon, flight 1282 headed from Portland to Ontario, California, climbing through 16,000 feet, an exit door panel that is classified really as a plug in the aft portion of the fuselage on this airplane, has let go and, of course, separated from the fuselage over Oregon City. So there's some parts of an airplane that are either in someone's backyard or in the woods of Oregon City. Fortunately, there were no serious injuries. The crew was able to get the airplane back on the ground in Portland. But now the investigative process starts with the NTSB, of course, the FAA, Boeing, and others to try and determine why there's a gaping hole in the side of the fuselage of this airplane. You and I have been talking off camera about a number of different issues with regard to a failure like this when it comes to the fuselage. And now, of course, this is just one more item or element of a 737 MAX that has to be looked at and scrutinized, in addition to a missing bolt in the rudder, engine cowling issues on the airplane that, again, tarnish the reputation of the MAX, even though the pilots who fly it love it. So now the question is, John, are these quality control issues coming out of the manufacturing process or something else?
Whose fault it is, I don't know. Remember, the fuselage is made by another company called Spirit in the middle of the U.S., in Wichita. They've been making fuselages for Boeing and Airbus. They make them for both of them for a long time. And they've been making a lot of these MAXs airplanes. Like many products, it comes in different configurations. So the MAX, if you put the largest number of seats on the airplane, so like 199 or up near there, you need an extra exit. So they build the exit in when they build the fuselage. If it's not going to be configured in that manner with that many seats, they don't need it, and they plug it. And by a plug, it's called just a sheet metal or composite, maybe in this case, blanking plate that close off that hole in the fuselage. And like the rest of the fuselage, so when the interior is put in the airplane, particularly the sidewalls are put in the airplane, as a passenger, you would never know that that exists behind there. And they've been reliable. We've been using those kinds of plugs on fuselages for 50 or 60 years. So there's something that happened to this one in particular that failed, and that's what the AD that they just pulled out with the mandatory grounding and the inspections, the inspections are going to take between 4 and 8 hours per airplane to accomplish. And early on, when it first came out, I couldn't figure out why it would take 4 hours to inspect an emergency exit window. But now, after looking at the details as they can become public, it's clear that you have to remove a number of inside panels from the airplane in order to gain access to the area to inspect it. And it's not clear yet exactly what the maintenance people will be looking at when they gain access to it, but I'll probably have that before the end of the day. But the important point here is that it wasn't what we know as an emergency exit window, which everybody's been saying. It's really a part of the fuselage that on all the U.S. airplanes is not used. Now, the only outfit that I know that uses that high density seating is Ryanair, but I'm sure in Europe and in Asia or anywhere where there's high density seating on a 737, they need to have that, because the requirement is for every 60 passengers, you got to have a way to get those people out of the airplane. So that dictates how many windows or doors you're going to have on the airplane.
So, John, being with there's a lot of questions for investigators to be asking and a lot of information that needs to be developed. The big thing, of course, is starting at the build process of the airplane. And the NTSB is going to have to go in and look at the build records, not only from Boeing, but of course, Spirit, since they make that portion of the fuselage, they make the entire fuselage tube. And they're going to have to determine whether or not, is this a manufacturing defect? Was this a one-off, or is this a systemic issue? I think that's the biggest question right now, because you just brought up that the mechanics are doing inspections because the FAA has put the airplane on the ground, basically, and they're telling them inspect it. But what are they inspecting for? Are you looking just to see if the plug is in place? Are you looking to see if there's cracks around it? Are you looking to see if there's enough rivets in it? What do you think they're looking at?
Well, I would suspect they're going to be looking at the whole set, that whole piece, and the focus is going to be where the attachment points are. But they're going to look beyond that. There's no sense going in and doing a detailed inspection and only limited it to a very small area. So they're going to really take a look at the whole entire area in case the problem is bigger than what just this one airplane was. So the area of inspection is going to have a considerably wider view than just the area in question. Where did it come from? Both of us visited Spirit years ago. That's a pretty first-class operation. So could they make a mistake in assembly? Of course, people make mistakes. And that's what quality is all about. If there's a step that is complicated that can cause a big problem, quality control is supposed to come behind the person who did the work and determine that the work was done in accordance with the published procedures. Now, we saw a lot of that going on at Spirit. Could there be a mistake in that process? Yes, there could be. Could an individual make a mistake in an area that doesn't require inspection? Yes, they can. So all of these factors are going to come in and probably change procedures for the future, right? Fortunately, this accident or event didn't cause any loss of life. So it damaged an airplane, we'll fix the airplane, and we'll fix the problem, right? And all we have to do at this point in time is make sure that all the existing airplanes don't have that same problem. So I'm sure in the last 12 hours or so that the FAA has been all over that airplane out there in Portland. And I'm sure Boeing drove down engineers and the FAA drove down their engineers to get a look at that overnight. So they probably have a very good handle right now on the failure mode for that particular event. So that's going to be the focus. But having said that, those same engineers are going to be in saying, what if this wasn't the one of, what if this secondary area had failed? So they're going to be playing the guessing game to make sure that the next inspections that they give out on this airplane, because this won't be the only one, the next inspections that these airplanes, 171 of them, have to go through will be more detailed and wider spread even.
So there's a couple things here, John. We know that, the DC-10 suffered a number of cargo door failures that led to rapid decompressions, damage to the aircraft, and some of them crashed. Then we had United 811, Boeing 747 coming out of Honolulu that lost the cargo door. And unfortunately, nine people were sucked out of the airplane and lost their life. And there were injuries in the cabin. And so we're fortunate in this particular event that the airplane was at a lower altitude, around 16,000 feet, when that plug let go, because the decompression that occurred wasn't as dramatic or catastrophic as if the airplane had been at 35,000 feet. It could have been definitely probably would have been fatal, and more damage to the aircraft would have occurred. The big issue for passengers right now is, what's their comfort level? I've been doing TV ahead of this particular podcast, and I've been talking about the fact that the FAA has now taken rapid action. They aren't waiting. They aren't pushing this off, going, hey, we'll let the investigative process, you know, go a little further, you know, get some more information. They're actually taking corrective action now. That's kind of a rare event for this to take place, isn't it, John?
Oh, it's very unusual for the FAA to move this fast. In theory, they're supposed to move this fast, but in history, they have been very slow to react. So it's really refreshing from my point of view that they're moving quickly, because we just can't wait anymore. There's just so many airplanes, so many people flying, that we really need to get in front of all these issues if we can, or at least be working at the pointy end. And in this case, the FAA did. They moved very quickly. So, you know, maybe those engineers that came down from Seattle, certification engineers, I'm sure that they were at least having the data given to them by somebody that's in Portland, giving it back to the Seattle FAA office, that they were able to look at the records that they have and saying, you know, here's a critical area. This is something we can't afford not to look at now. And it was a Washington, D.C. decision, not Seattle, FAA, Washington, D.C., and probably the Secretary of Transportation as well, that decided, no, we'll put them on the ground, inspect them.
You know, the other thing with regard to this is, given the history of the MAX recently, especially with the bolt in the rudder and some engine cowling issues, this puts that airplane back under a high level of scrutiny for a variety of different reasons. One, as you and I have talked previously, this airplane should be the safest airplane flying out there because it's been scrutinized so darn much. And all of a sudden, we continue to have these issues. Is this an isolated problem or a systemic issue that needs to be answered? And is this due to poor quality control, poor oversight, whether it's on Boeing's part, or is the ODA program that authorized designation that Boeing has for people have mischaracterized it as self-certification, but is that ODA program going to become another point of scrutiny like it did when MCAS came into existence?
Well, I'm sure on the latter part, the organizational designee for engineering is going to come under scrutiny again. But really, what baffles me is Boeing has spent hundreds of millions of dollars on this airplane. But the quality control, which means inspectors, means additional people that are going to look at what's being work that's been done, has not grown. I'm told by people that work in there that they really haven't had a very large increase in the number of quality inspectors looking at the product. And we see the quality problems coming out of South Carolina with the 787. And we see another one right now on the MAX. Boeing needs to overkill. They need to come in with enough inspectors with enough knowledge to ride herd on these airplanes until the workforce and everyone else gets back to normal. And then they can start peeling back some of those inspectors. The airlines do that routinely. In my number of years with the airlines, I've watched, because we had so many problems with airplanes that came out of heavy maintenance overhaul, so many problems, they filled up the inspection ranks. All of a sudden, we had 20, 30 additional inspectors spread over 3 days, three shifts, 7 days a week, which is only, you know, maybe 30 inspectors in that instance would only mean 20 any given day. But it means that they had a lot additional people to do looking. And then a year later, after things settled down, all right, we start peeling those inspectors out of the operation. They start getting them back down to where they were before, because it's expensive. I understand that, but Boeing should have done that in the very beginning, come in with overkill, really ride herd on everything, and then back it off based upon what they see.
You know, the other thing that we've talked about is, of course, the quality of the people that are actually working on these airplanes and manufacturing the airplanes. You know, Boeing has lost a lot of talent through retirements and everything else. And we've always been critical of the NTSB for the same thing. They lost a lot of talent. So the quality of investigations has suffered. And now, I mean, I think the NTSB should be looking at what's going on within the organization, Boeing, and even Spirit, to determine whether or not, you know, again, is this because they don't have the experience with people building these airplanes? Is there a lack of course, quality oversight and the experience necessary in a quality inspector to identify these problems? How are these airplanes getting out of, you know, the hangar, if you will, and into line service with these problems that, like we had talked about with the rudder issue, that bolt is a required inspection item.
Yeah, I don't know how the bolts get out of there like that. But I've seen landing gear bolts get out without being installed too. And that's lack of quality going on. And what's really concerning, and I've been sitting here trying to figure out where they are in this process, but both Boeing and Airbus are pushing their authorities. They want to increase the production. In Boeing's case, I think they're doing 42 airplanes a month right now. They want to go up to 51. Well, if I was the FAA, I would tell Boeing, no, you're not going to 51 until you clean up the problems on the 42, till you start putting an airplane out that doesn't have a whole laundry list of problems when it comes off the assembly line. And I'm sure the French will be doing the same, taking a look at that, because when you accelerate the assembly line, essentially assembly line, people make mistakes. If you're not adding additional more work out of the existing crew without any safeguards over that, you're asking for trouble. Maybe not today, maybe not tomorrow, but it's going to come up. People get tired, people get complacent, you're going to have problems. So if you're going to increase the production like that, that's almost a 25% increase, then you best be putting additional safeguards in place so that the quality is maintained.
You know, the other issue that you and I have talked about in the past, and it, you know, we had these discussions when we were talking about the MAX, is where is senior management? Where's the executive management of Boeing? Not only at the president, vice president level, CEO level, but where are the board of directors? Why aren't they asking the hard questions? Why aren't they scrutinizing? Hey, we keep having all these issues. What's going on down there? Who's asking those questions? You know, I think we've had this discussion years ago that they need to have people like us, even as advisors to the board, who can go down and ask those questions. Why? Because we've been there, we've done that, we've asked these types of questions, and we're not afraid to ask those questions and get the answers. And right. I'm just wondering, you know, do they not want to hear it? I mean, this is something that just cropped up yesterday. This has been a systemic issue.
I've seen what Boeing has done. Boeing was everybody was in Seattle, and they someone from Douglas comes in as president of the company after the merger, and they move the executive offices to Chicago, right? There's no airplanes being built in Chicago. So now it's just a paper pushing operation in Chicago. I see good operations that run. When Ray Velika was the vice president of maintenance for Delta Airlines and also for Continental, he did it there as well. It was part of his MO. Right? Every morning when he came to work, he started his day walking the hangar, talking to the people, talking to the midnight, because those are the people that doing a brunt of the work and nobody's ever talking to them. He would walk through and talk to those people. What's going on? What are you seeing? And so on. So he had the answers. Go back a little way. I lived in the shadow of the General Electric aircraft engine plant in Lynn, Massachusetts. I saw repeatedly at 5 o'clock in the morning, Herman the German, I even forgotten his real name, who was the head of that engine for GE, both in Ohio and in Lynn. He lived in Swampscott, Mass, right next door to the plant. He would walk his dog, and he would be in the plant in the middle of the night when he took his dog for a walk at 5 o'clock in the morning, right? That's getting information. That's touching your people. In Chicago, Boeing in Chicago, they've lost that ability. They've lost the ability for somebody within their organization that's seriously concerned about what they're seeing, being able to feed it up to senior management so that senior management can address it. And maybe the addressing is, no, it's not an issue. That's usually not all the people want to know, is somebody cares enough to listen to what their concern is and to look at it. And if it's not a concern, okay, it's not a concern. We move on. But sometimes and oftentimes it can be. And that leads to whistleblowers too, if you blow them, if you ignore them. And certainly Boeing has had their share of whistleblowers, especially in South Carolina.
And I'm sure, you know, along that line, John, if you took a bunch of retired Boeing people, recently retired Boeing people, you got them together and said, speak freely, you'd probably, and management would definitely hear a lot of things that they probably didn't know were even existing down on the manufacturing floor.
Like too many filters in between, you know? So if I'm working for some manager and he's having trouble meeting whatever the deadline is, the numbers, whatever it is, and I'm saying, you know, this is a problem. And he sees that as a detriment to him eating his numbers, he's going to bury that. So by the time you get up to the decision makers that can address these problems, they're not seeing it. We're accusing in the war in the Ukraine, we're accusing the Russian generals of the same thing. They're not telling Putin the full story. I mean, that is probably the history of management in the world, that the people below never tell the guy, the emperor has no clothes, or whatever that saying was, right? You're right. If they were to pull these Boeing people back in a no holds barred, tell me what you think conversation, they would probably find out many, many flaws in their organization that they could deal with easily. But no one has listened so far.
Well, I think the investigative process, because it's just getting started, of course, the NTSB really needs to find where that door fell over Oregon City, because like United 811, the 747 that lost the cargo door, that cargo door, once it was recovered off the floor of the ocean, provided a lot of answers to questions that the board couldn't really answer just from examining the airplane itself. And I got a feeling that that door is going to hold the key to some of the questions that will, again, relate to safety improvements or inspections in this particular event as well.
Yes. Yeah, you raised that door issue. Right. Before that door was found, the NTSB had issued a probable cause that was 180 degrees out from what it was after they found the door. So your point is very much alive and well in this case. You need to have all the data, and having the door and all the pieces from that door missing only gives us half of the story to make a decision on, and it may not be the right decision.
Well, I think with this special edition of Flight Safety Detectives, we will keep you informed as we get information or we start to develop ideas or concerns or at least issue areas that we think that the investigative team should be looking at, because it is in the interest not only of those of us in aviation, but the flying public. I know that there's a concern right now, I've heard it, by passengers. Is it safe to get on the airplanes even after the inspections? Could this happen to me? Yeah, anything can happen, but you and I, John, are on airplanes almost every week. I still have a high level of confidence in the system. And like you said earlier, you know, the fact that the FAA is taking action now, they aren't waiting, we aren't pushing it off into the abyss until we get more information. That, if from a passenger standpoint for me, gives me a higher level of comfort that, hey, look, they're not just sitting around, they're actually doing something. And if another inspection is needed, based on new information that gets developed, so be it. But I know that, you know, we're trying to operate at the highest levels of safety currently.
Yeah, and we will. And all the people doing those inspections, they're going to look, and they will themselves look a lot further around what the FAA says. You know, the FAA may say, look at this 1 foot by 1 foot area. They're going to look at 4 feet by 4 feet. They're not going to just focus on that little area. So,
yeah,
it's going to get a lot of scrutiny I too have no fear. I love flying on the Max.
Oh yeah, it's a great airplane. Yeah, I love it.
I think I'm on one this week. I'm not sure because American Airlines runs a lot of Max flights out of Boston, and that's what I'm going to be on probably.
Oh, good. Well, again, we will keep our audience updated, and we appreciate you watching this special edition of Flight Safety Detectives.
Thank you for checking out our show. We really value our listeners and subscribers. Our podcast gets ranked by you and how much you like it. So please give us 5 stars in your podcast platform.
We want to keep in contact with you. We are on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and of course, YouTube.
You can email the show at flightsafetydetectives@gmail.com. By the way, if you're on YouTube, we're really working on growing the channel, and it helps if you all send in comments. Please do that, and we read all the comments.
And be sure to subscribe. Remember, if you're in the market for aviation insurance, you can save 5% with Avemco just by mentioning our show. Visit them at www.avemco.com. That's it for this episode of the Flight Safety Detective. Until the next episode, fly safe.